From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, big business sides with the woke mob, pro-life legislation gets closer to a floor vote, and the controversial vaccine passport. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. We start out this week's program with a look at the ongoing fallout concerning Georgia's crackdown on voter fraud. From Major League Baseball to Coca-Cola to major motion pictures, more and more businesses are jumping into the political fray on the side of the woke left. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the growing divide in our country is Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Good to join you, and thank you for putting attention on this topic of how we're going to protect young women in sports and allow them to compete, and Tony, allow them to excel.
This is, I mean, obviously we can have different opinions, and we reach consensus through our policy, but we see now big business, we see these sports entities threatening to punish states by pulling events, all this kind of stuff. I've never seen this type of activism by business and these sports entities.
The activism by businesses is just astounding. You know, if you want to say the country is equally divided between conservative and liberal or progressive, then yes, but why would these companies be choosing to shun half the country? And that is what they're doing. Why would they be choosing to put biological females at a disadvantage when it comes to sports competition? And it is terribly disturbing to see this kind of activism. People were very disappointed with the MLB decision. And I have talked to people in Georgia with businesses, minority-owned businesses, who are going to be really adversely impacted by that decision. Was that fair to those business owners? I have so many people that said they appreciated the PGA playing golf this past weekend, the Masters, and allowing these small businesses to be there, allowing the community to be there and to participate and to benefit from having that event in their community.
I want to read from the NCAA Board of Governors statement that they released yesterday on this. So the NCAA Board of Governors firmly and unequivocally supports the opportunity for transgender student athletes to compete in college sports. This commitment, this is the part I want you to respond to. This commitment is grounded in our values of inclusion and fair competition. How can that be fair competition?
Well, it is not fair competition for girls. And look at the number of female athletes, women that have had a career in sports. This has been their career, and they have spoken out against this. Look at the parents and the coaches that we are hearing from that continue to say, this is not right to have a biological male who has declared that they self-identify as female, compete against them in sporting events. This is something that we should all say, this is not right. And these biological females deserve the right to be able to compete and to excel.
Senator Blackburn, this is just one aspect of this debate that is raging with business and these sports entities weighing in. I want to play a clip of President Biden. You mentioned the Major League Baseball. He, in an interview on March 31st, he said, look, I support the professional players for wanting to pull out of Georgia. Listen to this clip. Clip number one, please.
I think today's professional athletes are acting incredibly responsibly. I would strongly support them doing that. People look to them. They're leaders.
Now, I want to play another clip. because you have brought very clear attention to this issue that I'm going to bring up here. This is another clip, but this is of the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki responding to a question about whether or not the Biden administration continues to support the Beijing Olympics. Clip three, please.
Our position on the 2022 Olympics has not changed. We have not discussed and are not discussing any joint boycott with allies and partners. We, of course, consult closely with allies and partners at all levels to define our common concerns and establish a shared approach. But there's no discussion underway of a change in our plans regarding the Beijing Olympics from the United States point of view.
So we can't go to Georgia, but we can go to Beijing.
We can go to Beijing and we can consult with our allies and partners. How about consulting with the U.S. Senate, with the U.S. House? How about consulting with the American people? I can tell you this for sure. Tennesseans do not want to see us going to Beijing and participating in the Olympics there, knowing that Beijing is going to be spying on all of our teams the whole time that they are there, knowing that the Olympic Committee is having uniforms made in Xinjiang province where genocide is being carried out against the Uyghurs, knowing that some of these American companies that have licensed sporting equipment and clothing are having it made in Xinjiang province. So are we going to listen more to the Chinese Communist Party? Are we going to say enough is enough? Our athletes deserve better than this. Let's look for a way to allow competition. Let's encourage our allies to come for the Freedom Games or the American Games or something else other than going into Beijing. I think this is the wrong message to send. Look, the Chinese Communist Party has been very clear. What they would like to do is become the world leader in the 21st century. By the time you get to 2040, that is their goal. They want to do away with the nuclear family. They want to do away with organized religion. Why? Because that is all a part of Marxist theology. This is the Chinese Communist Party. They are not our friend. And why should we be competing there and having our athletes there in Beijing?
You made reference to this, Senator Blackburn. Not only is the administration speaking out of both sides of his mouth, I mean, you know, can't go to Georgia, pull out of Georgia, but we can go to China where they're killing people. But you've also, you're calling out the CEOs of some of these big American companies that are actually sponsoring the Beijing Olympics.
Oh, yes, indeed. And I'm calling them out for saying that they're going to be boycotting Georgia or they're speaking out against the bill, the election reform bill in Georgia, and saying that it says and does things that is absolutely incorrect. And it is astounding to me, Tony, that they're doing it and they're getting by. I feel like sending them a copy of the legislation from Georgia and saying, please read this and then apologize. Half of your customers may be on one side of the political divide, and the other half may be on the other side. But companies should be selling products without taking a political position. The MLB, the NCAA, the PGA, the NFL, the NBA, all of your sporting leagues should do what they're there to do.
Absolutely.
Play ball. And they need to get out of this going in and saying, we're going to disenfranchise all the people of Georgia. We're going to disenfranchise all the people of somewhere else.
You're absolutely
and,
right.
And to be paying that much attention to something that is factually incorrect and making decisions on it and then doubling down on it.
Right.
It is not good corporate governance.
Just look, if you make widgets, make widgets. Leave the policies and politics to someone else. Senator Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much for joining us today. As always, great to hear from you, and we appreciate your clear position on the issues.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Senator Blackburn when you visit tonyperkins.com. You can also join Tony every morning on Facebook as he shares a devotional from our 2-year Bible reading plan. And you can be a part of that reading plan. Just look for details over at tonyperkins.com.
With the recent increase in censorship of conservative Christian perspectives, it is as important as ever to stay up to date on the fight to uphold marriage and family values. That's why FRC's blog publishes timely articles focusing on a variety of relevant topics, such as abortion, sexuality, and religious liberty. Our writers cover the latest developments on these issues to ensure you are informed from a biblical worldview. To stay up to date on current news related to faith, family, and freedom, visit frcblog.com.
Stay up to date on what's happening at Family Research Council by downloading our Stand Firm app. We share all of our latest content there, so it's easy for you to have all you need in one place. See the latest tweets, articles, videos, radio programs, and blog posts all in one spot. Visit the App Store on your phone and search for FRC's Stand Firm app to get a conservative, biblically informed source for what is happening in our nation's capital. Download the Stand Firm app today. Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the biggest abortion supplier in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed 354,871 abortions in fiscal year 2019, up by over 9,000 abortions since 2018. According to these numbers, Planned Parenthood aborted 972 babies every single day. To learn more about what Planned Parenthood is really doing, visit frc.org/PlannedParenthoodFacts.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we've talked about numerous times over the past few years, Democrats in Congress have continually prevented the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act from ever reaching the floor for a vote. But as the balance of power in the House has narrowed dramatically, the discharge petition for the bill gets closer and closer to being passed. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Wednesday was Representative Ann Wagner of Missouri.
All right, so where are we right now on the discharge petition here on the first day? How many signatures thus far?
Well, I will tell you what, we're trying to get up to about 200. And I just left the floor. I'm down in Whip Scalise's office right now, visiting with you and your listeners. And we were, I think, well past 150. And I'm wrangling them up as quickly as I possibly can. We now, with swearing in today of Julie Letlow, we are at 212 Republicans. So I want to make sure that we get above 200 today, or at least hit that mark. And of course, we're going to have 212 Republicans that are going to sign this discharge petition, and a historic, Tony, 31 pro-life women.
Yes.
Are going to be on this discharge petition. We will just need, we have one more open seat. Sadly, Ron Wright of Texas passed away, and his seat is still up for special election. So when that is filled here shortly, then we'll be to 213, 5 seats away. We need to really, really push 5 Democrats to do the right thing. And many of them have campaigned on and told their constituents that they believe in the sanctity of life. And let's hold them to it and see if we can't finally, after 80 tries last Congress on my bill, let's try and get them on the record this time around.
Now, Congresswoman Wagner, this is not a stretch, I would think, for any member of Congress, because we're not talking about, you know, although I'd like to see abortion eliminated, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a baby that survives an attempted abortion, simply saying that they will receive the same medical care as any other newborn baby, right?
That's right. That is absolutely right. Every precious baby, regardless, Tony, of the circumstances of his or her birth, deserves to receive the same life-saving care that any other child would receive. And I'll tell you, as a mother, as a legislator, and as an advocate who came to Congress to serve as a voice for the voiceless, I believe, like you do, and I'm sure your listeners do, that life begins at conception, and that it's wrong to kill a child, no matter how many weeks old he or she may be. But what we're talking about here is infanticide.
Yeah.
To kill a child after he or she is born alive. 70% of Americans who identify as Democrats support this legislation. You're right. It is not a stretch. And I'm just so highly offended that Speaker Pelosi will not even allow folks to have a vote on this critical piece of legislation. So we're going to try once again. We're just should be at the end of the day about a handful shy on this discharge petition. So we need for your listeners to be the strong advocates that they are, and to contact their members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, but certainly on the Democrat side of the aisle, and make sure that they stand up for life, that they sign the discharge petition, and that we get every member of Congress on the record on this very, very important issue.
So, Anne, with that understanding of what the bill does, it simply it draws a line at infanticide in the United States of America is what it does. It just says we are not going to, if a baby survives an abortion attempt, we're not going to end its life, and we're not going to let it lay there and die. We're going to give it basic medical attention. Are you telling me that it's questionable as to whether or not we can find five Democratic members of Congress that would say, I'm opposed to infanticide?
I sure certainly wouldn't think so. You should know, Tony, that this bill has passed the U.S. House of Representatives and had this bill in the 115th Congress come to the floor. And it passed with bipartisan support. So it's been done before. And I believe if it came to the floor and folks were and members of Congress were forced to go on the record that, yes, it would pass. And it should pass. As you said, this is not a stretch here. I believe that everyone should be on the record on this. And I'm going to tell you what, I will never stop working until this legislation is not just passed again in the U.S. House of Representatives, but until it's signed into law on the federal level. This bill also, I should tell you, has a reporting requirements that say that healthcare providers and employees have to report any violations of the act of law. Some of our issues in coming up with some of the data is that only a handful of states actually report. So we don't even know really how many of our precious babies are left to die in a clinic or a hospital, sadly. So it does multiple things, but the most important thing is it's going to save lives of this unfold.
And I know that you will not give up until the mission is accomplished. Congresswoman Anne Wagner, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for your tenacity.
You bet. That I am. So thank you, Tony, and thanks to your listeners. And thank them now for the work they're going to do to make sure that we bring this to the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Absolutely. We'll give it our best shot.
Find out ways that you can positively impact the political process and the world around you when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And be sure to follow us on your favorite social media platform, including Gab. We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Would you like to spend more time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. The Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan takes you through the scripture every day in an engaging manner. Start reading with FRC today. When you sign up, we text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
Since June of 2015, over 12,000 Christians have been killed in Nigeria. This violence has reached a point at which experts are warning of a progressive genocide specifically targeting Christians across Africa's largest and most economically powerful nation. Yet this violence often goes unreported in the media, and if reported, is seriously downplayed. To learn more about what is actually taking place in Nigeria, along with other countries where Christians face persecution, visit frc.org/Nigeria.
Since the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade in 1973, over 60 million people are now missing from our country due to legalized abortion. Public opinion, our knowledge of law, and scientific advancements demonstrate that Roe should by no means be considered settled law. Roe is an abomination in our country's history, and it's time for the horrendous practice of legalized abortion to end. To learn more about the legal, historical, and cultural reasons to overturn Roe v. Wade, go to frc.org/Roe.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. It seems like there's a new controversy almost every day surrounding the coronavirus or the vaccine program, and the latest contention is over whether or not people will need to start carrying a vaccine passport in order to participate in certain activities. And these are the same people who say voter ID is racist. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about his opposition to these passports is Governor Pete Ricketts of Nebraska.
Governor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on, Tony. I appreciate it.
Let me ask you, what are your concerns about government vaccine passport programs or requirements?
Well, just on a basic level, any sort of vaccine passport would violate our freedom of movement, our rights to that, certainly violate our privacy with regard to our own health, could be a HIPAA violation. We also got to remember these are emergency use authorizations. So these are still under that emergency use. They haven't gone through the full FDA process, and therefore really need to be a voluntary program because it is emergency use. So I think for a lot of reasons, a vaccine passport program is a terrible idea. It's at least for travel with or anything else within this country. And that's why we said the state of Nebraska would not participate. I wanted to make sure that everybody knew we'd protect their privacy, that if somebody signed up to get a vaccine through the state, that we were going to make sure that their privacy, their information stayed with us. We were not going to share it with anybody because I didn't want that to be a barrier for somebody getting the vaccine. And of course, we certainly would discourage anybody else in the private sector from trying to create a vaccine passport program.
Well, unfortunately, not every state or city that begins with an N is like Nebraska. I guess I'd have to choose between going to Nebraska, New York. I'll be going to Nebraska. New York City Mayor de Blasio says a vaccine passport could be an important part of our recovery and a part of the solution. What do you say to him?
Well, again, I would say that for all the reasons I just outlined, it's a bad idea that you're really restricting people. And I got to tell you, I've also had people come up and tell me and say, hey, I can't get a vaccine because of my particular health conditions. If you've got, for example, an immunocompromised position, you may not be able to get the vaccine. So what are we supposed to tell those folks that actually can't get the vaccine, that you can't participate in whatever activity we want to have a passport for, whether it's getting on an airplane, getting on a train, going into a concert, some sort of event like that? Are we just going to tell those people they're not allowed to participate? Again, I think that that's a wrong answer. The right answer is to educate people on why they should get vaccinated and work on getting that done as broadly as possible. And when we get enough people vaccinated, that's when the virus won't be able to transmit. That's really how we work our way through this pandemic.
Governor, you mentioned this, that you're going to discourage businesses from requiring it, that would de facto a passport requirement to do business with them. What steps might you take in Nebraska to prohibit companies from requiring proof of vaccine to attend a concert, go into a movie hall, or some other type of transaction?
Yeah, it's too late in our legislature to introduce that type of vaccine passport type legislation to prevent that. But one of the things we found is just by coming out ahead of time and setting the expectation, we can really have a big influence. And I'll give you one example. When last summer, the Commissioner of Education and I came out in July saying it was our expectation that our schools in Nebraska would have in-person classrooms in the fall. What we found is that we got a lot of compliance with that. In fact, I saw one study or one report that showed Nebraska was the number two state for having kids in classrooms right behind Florida. So I think that, when you set that expectation early on, and we've certainly seen that here in Nebraska, where we've set the expectation that We're not going to support vaccine passports. We've seen now the University of Nebraska, the University of Nebraska football team, our state college system, all say that they're not going to require young people to have vaccines to attend classes next fall.
Governor, you mentioned education. I want to transition here because this was a headline that actually I never thought I would see. It's one that I like. It's a headline that says Governor Ricketts calls on State Board of Education to scrap politicized sex education standards. What's happening there in Nebraska?
Well, what we had was our State Board of Education, which, by the way, does not report to me. They're a separately elected board. They went out and created these health education standards that included sex education. Now, this is something our legislature has in the past specifically said they are not going to do. The legislature has specifically said they don't have to do this. They don't want them to do it. In fact, it's not required by the State Board of Education to pursue this. And they included political activist groups and left out mainstream groups. They did not, for example, talk to the Catholic Conference, which educates about 10% of our kids in the state. They didn't talk to my chief medical officer. They didn't talk to the public board of health. They didn't talk to any of those folks. And they created these standards that basically sexualize our kids. They're teaching things that are age inappropriate, politically sensitive. Some things should be left to the parents, non-scientific based things. And I'll just give you one example of one of the things they're talking about is teaching seventh graders about anal and oral sex. And I'm sorry, but I don't want my 12-year-old and my kids are now grown well beyond that, thank goodness, but I wouldn't want my 12-year-old being able to taught that in school. That's just not age appropriate. Right. And just an example of how they're sexualizing our kids. You know, that really just steps over the bounds. So we've called on them to scrap their standards and called on parents to reach out to our State Board of Education and email them, call them, write them. They had a hearing where the opponents of this vastly outnumbered the proponents of it and really asked parents to get involved so that the State Board would hear this and really rethink what they're doing.
Governor, 10 seconds. Where can parents go to get more information, our listeners in Nebraska?
Sure, www.education.ne.gov. They can find the survey. It's right there on the homepage. They can fill out the survey. I've done it. And they can list their objections right there.
All right. We'll make sure we have a link on our website as well. Governor Pete Ricketts, as always, great to have you on the program. And thanks for what you're doing there in Nebraska.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You have a good one.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, encouraging you to pray for our nation. I want to thank you for being with us. And I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.